There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
To dare.
Huh?
Beautiful.
Oh, tell me, how am I supposed to live without you? How am I supposed to live?
Do jingle bells. Do jingle bells.
Nope.
There's some new...
Just doing Doggy Michael Bolton today.
there's some new weird... speaker thing that you can plug your stereo in and it will play sounds along with your music that your pets will enjoy.
This country should be taken over.
Yeah. Is it the sound
just keys jingling? And,
is it the sound of friction on a leg, which to them is fucking? So that's like, those are hot doggy sex sounds.
Hot doggy sex
and
sounds.
A little bit of...
I think there's a serious... or XM channel that is just
there's dedicated plenty of room for doggy sex sounds.
Doggy
are we on
95?
Now?
Oh,
we
I think
are.
We've started now. Hey, by the way, the theme song was Onomatoguchi. People keep asking me. I keep forgetting to tell people.
I posted it on the comment section. Of
I appreciate that. I'm a poor host.
Onomatoguchi?
Onomatoguchi, yeah. It's an 8-bit band.
Figure Scare?
Yep. Christy Onomatoguchi.
She was great.
Now she's doing 8-bit music. Now she's doing 8-bit rock.
Good for her.
8-bit rock.
Usually
yeah.
They do ice capades and that's it.
Yep.
Is this how these work?
You put your face on the popper screen.
Put your nose into it.
It's not a popper screen. It's just a resting.
It works like a pen sleeve, which you would find in Dumbledore's
mics,
office.
Which I'm usually ashamed whenever I do interviews that I'm not on camera for.
Joel, I want you to open your mind and fall into my memories.
I was a Chinese woman with bound feet. We could not show our faces.
You were not?
Yeah,
you've
now,
come a long way.
Thankfully.
You've really come a long way.
That time.
The Chinese lady that I'm speaking to is Joel McHale, who's here. Yes, it does sound like we're in a warehouse because we've recorded the last couple of these in an office in the Comcast building.
Right.
And
the
so,
offices are
and
warehouses.
And half the room is made of glass, so... Yeah. You can hear the traffic outside.
So there's a lot of bouncing around. But a nice view. We got the tar pits outside.
Ah, tar pits.
Beautiful.
Look at that.
In the immortal words of Adam Carolla, only L.A. would make a park out of piles of stinking tar.
Only goddamn L.A. we make. And fuck Sid and Marty Croft.
He went off on that diatribe last time.
Who could
Adam.
Hate them so much?
He hates them. Hates them.
Hates them.
Like Hitler hates them.
Who does he hate?
Sid and Marty Croft.
Why?
Because he hates Land of the Lost. He hates Sigmund the Sea Monsters. Oh. He thinks the whole thing is just a big, big pile of retardo, and he was not pleased at all. By the way, Joel, thank you for coming in early in the morning. I know I always feel like I have a busy schedule, and I feel like you're 20% busier than I am.
25 at least.
I'm going to go with 200.
No,
but
oh, yes,
I have
because
a little...
you have a lot of jobs.
I have children.
And you've got two kids.
I have tiny children
yep,
running around. So this isn't, and this actually is not early for me, but it is. But this was supposed to be an entire week off, from Community, but now we're working 3 out of the 5 days off.
So, oh, I read your tweets. I saw the twit pic you posted of you guys waiting for your script yesterday.
Yes, we got to... well, first the script was going to be read at 1, and it wasn't ready. Then it was going to be read at 2. We all got there at 2. And then around 3:15, we started reading.
Now, are you comfortable enough on the show at this point to be like, what the fuck, guys? Or are you still in kind of nice guy mode?
Oh, I am the I've never been more thankful in my life. I can't, literally, every minute that I'm there, I am... Could not. I can't believe that people hired me to do it.
That's good. We'll give it a couple seasons, and then
give it a couple seasons, and we'll turn into the Desperate Housewives.
Then you can start. No matter what, you'll never be the biggest dick on set.
Oh yeah. Well, how dare you?
He's referring, of course, to Danny Pudi. No, by the way, Danny Pudi, other nicest guy in the world.
Yeah, he's great.
The nicest guy in the world,
and so freaking talented.
Out of his mind.
I knew Danny before he was.
Did you really?
Yes.
From where?
He was friends with my girlfriend Janet, she's really good friends with him.
Did they do sketch?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know how they do each other.
Right?
Now that I think about it, he might have been fucking her. I'm not 100% sure. Mm. But you know what? Good for him.
Guy
he's awesome.
Friends with.
Yeah, that's how it works.
Okay.
But
I'm friends
nice.
With Janet.
Oh my God. Does that mean that
no, it doesn't.
You're Danny Pudi?
Yes, it does.
Dressed up like a hipster.
Danny Pudi is the most petite human being.
He's wee.
Well,
he's
made not of crackers. Short. He's tall, but he's very skinny.
He's brittle. He's brittle like Prince.
Wish I was that skinny. He's not tiny like Seacrest.
Just want to snap him like a breadstick.
Yeah,
but say, unlike the other,
he's
the real
deceptively
Abed.
Strong and wiry.
You say that Seacrest is small, but you are you're tall like a building. Whenever I've been on the soup next to you, I feel like a hobbit trying to ride the Ent, the tree creature. Like, I look so tiny in comparison to you, and I'm so jealous. Take me to Mordor, Ent! Ah, you fucking Ent! Let me just rub up on your branch for a minute.
One of us is going to be on Lost.
Charlie.
Yes,
boy, now
well,
I'm Desmond.
But you, how tall are you? 6?
I'm 5'10".
All right.
I'm 5'10". Just under 6 feet.
But
still,
you weigh 135 pounds.
Yeah, I'm like 145.
I remember when Chris was 200.
Doughy? No. I was like 170. In the old days, I was 170.
Didn't look like it.
Boy.
I appreciate that. You know, I carry all my weight in my face and my neck.
No, you carried it everywhere.
No, it's really
along
just...
Along with that sadness.
It's evenly distributed.
Wait a second. Does my blubber make me look fat? Yes, it makes you look fat.
That's what I met you.
You went from being... Kind of like people, yeah. I was like, "Oh, there's that." You transformed when you lost that weight.
Yeah, man. It's like I quit drinking in 2003, and one of the things that kept me sober was vanity because I lost so much weight so fast. Yeah. I was like, "Wait a minute, this isn't so bad." And then later on, of course, I realized like, "Oh, I was on a destructive life path to nowhere."
But you're eating like shit, right?
But
when
yeah,
you
but
drinking.
If you, yeah. But because drinking alone is not going to make you. That
if you're drinking like 15, 20 beers a day, yes, they will. And then,
I was going to say, if you're just having like Midori sours all day.
No. It was look, man, a couple Zimas and I'm good. But it was also eating pizza at like 4 o'clock
there
in the morning.
There was one time I had to drive you home from the M Bar and you like maybe go way out of the way for Jack in the Box.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. No, I was happy. I was broke, so I was stuck.
At 4 in the morning, you were like...
Yeah.
I need a double Whopper.
Yeah, because I was trying to start a little fat camp in my tummy, and I needed some campers, and they lived at Jack in the Box, and that's where I had to...
But now, as you all know, picture of health. Picture of...
I'm in pretty good health now. Yeah, I'm in pretty good shape.
Do you exercise?
Yeah, I do. I do, like 3 times a week.
Good for you.
I run.
You belong to a gym?
Yeah, I belong to a gym, and then I also have a trainer, and he trains out of his
place. I have nothing
place.
To add to this conversation.
That is not surprising, since you can't pull your chair up to the table. I'm sorry, and I've just met you.
It may
be
my favorite.
But I feel familiar with you, that's why I'm able to
say this might be my favorite thing about you, is that you could say the worst thing to someone's face, and it literally, it still comes off amazing.
Well, that's...
I always talk about this in interviews, where I'm like... Like, you could talk to Joel and be like, hey, Joel, I'm doing a new show. And then Joel would go, why would I care that you're doing anything? And you would laugh because it's
That's what no one's ever
it's
really...
It's a gift.
It's
a gift.
Insecure.
It's like charm. All charm is just an asshole with a smile. That's all it really is. Just
well, it's
like
also a wand with a phoenix feather inside.
Agreed. Thanks, I guess.
No,
I
no,
figure it, that, you know, from as I think people think that I must be an a-hole from
You're
the
not,
soup.
Though, because you I mean, I knew you before the soup, and you've always been like the nicest guy. Let me tell you a little Joel McHale story, you guys. Let me tell you a little way back. Years ago, when I was doing booze-themed comedy...
at O'Brien's?
At O'Brien's in Santa Monica. Joel, I don't know how long you've been...
I'm sorry, there is a... Fire engine.
Sorry, there's a
crashing.
Sorry, there's a 82, there's a flatbed with a forklift on it that had to come to an abrupt stop.
The tar pits are now on fire.
It was like the beginning of Transformers.
They don't do that.
All right, so.
Stand down, soldier. Oh, robot's dead.
Gosh. What a lazy transformer.
That's my Jack A transformer. Yeah.
You just made a sound. You didn't actually transform.
Yeah, I'm tired.
You're tired. We have to save the Earth.
Yeah.
Remember
Fuck you,
the
man.
All Spark? We saved that, and we couldn't think of any of the ideas for another movie.
Right. No, you've had too much energon. I don't have a problem. You got the problem.
I didn't see the second one.
But I didn't see the second one either.
You guys?
No. I didn't see the first one. It confused me.
What?
Not the story, but just like it was too much going on screen. I just
didn't
like
come
it.
On.
I don't know about that.
What do you mean? It was like an education.
It really was. It was
just the like movie, an education?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Except with all the good parts. So years ago, performing at O'Brien's, Joel, this was like 2001 or two, Joel had this really awesome, like before anyone really had started wearing like the leather wristbands with the watch embedded in it,
yeah.
I was like, where did you get that? And he goes, I made it. I'm like, what? Yeah. He fucking made this watch. And then he was like, you know what? If you like it so much, I will make one for you.
Wow.
He never did, but the point is he offered, and yes. He did not
I never
have to do
got
that.
The leather band. I bought the leather band, and then I got the watch off.
But it was awesome.
That I didn't do it for you?
That part was not so cool, but listen, I probably would still be wearing it, and I don't know if it would still be a cool thing to be wearing.
It's not.
So it's better
don't
than
wear
you
it. You don't wear any watch now.
No, because I have bird wrists. I have tiny little bird wrists. I know birds have wings, but let's just pretend they have
hands.
There's
watches for people with bird wrists.
They're called lady watches, yes.
No, like a lot of those watches on TokyoFlash.com.
Yes.
Like very
I need
nice.
To shop where Asians shop. Yes. Because that's...
Do you have an Asian body?
I do. I'm an Asian...
Are you a size zero
I'm an
or
Asian
smaller?
Medium. Asian medium is like triple XS. Yeah. In,
I thought it was an Asian psychic.
Yeah, no, yes, an Asian medium.
Have you been to Japan or...
Japan
or China?
I've never been to... I kept thinking G4 was going to send me to Tokyo,
because they always keep me
behind to host Attack of the Show, and they send everyone out, so I never get to go to... But I really want to... I also want to go to Korea, because they are light years ahead of us in cellular technology and all sorts of other cool...
And you just want to be like, wow, I'm on this cell system right now?
Yes, I just want to be able to
be a part of it.
I just want to not fucking yell at my phone for once.
South Koreans are the ones with they use the little Slim Jims to work their computers, right? They're a little touch screen. Have you heard about that?
What, you mean like the meat product Slim Jims?
Yeah, like they use little mini sausages so they can keep their hands in their gloves but still manipulate their,
oh, yeah,
like,
because you need organic material because the touch screens are capacitive.
Yeah.
Right.
What?
So they like started selling like specific little pieces of sausage to... use their phones while they have their gloves
you
on.
You see, Joel, the iPhone works on the principle of capacitive touchscreen, which means there's an electron field in between two thin pieces of glass, and you need organic material to break that field, and that's how the phone knows where you're touching.
Why not? And the finger, and they don't touch it with the finger because it's dirty?
No, just
they have gloves
because
on,
it's cold.
So they use a Slim Jim, which is mostly cow.
How... Does Wendy Williams know about this?
I'm not sure she does.
She lights her Slim Jims on the air.
Does she really?
She heats them up. She pulls out a lighter and lights and heats a Slim Jim.
And what does she say after? Like, it's almost like real food?
Yeah, she's like, this is like real food when you light it up.
That's fantastic.
That's very white trash. So it's so cold in Korea that they cannot take their glove off.
How cold is it? I don't know.
It's so cold. They have to use. It's not even. You don't even have to make up a joke. They have to use sausages to activate their capacitive touchscreens.
Humor is because it's kind of true.
I like truth jokes. That just that there's no real punchline.
Like, there's no joke. It's like
Rainn Wilson had it all, and it was like, knock knock, who's there? Apples. Who? My father is an alcoholic. Like there was no joke. It was just a real truth spewing.
That's great. We did that in Community.
Oh, you did?
For just a moment. Anthony Michael Hall played a bully.
Oh, that was a great episode.
Who was going to kick my ass because I defended Abed. And he goes, knock, knock, your balls in my... your fist in my balls. Well, I can't even... Your balls in my... And my fist in your balls. He goes, knock, knock, my fist in your balls. And I just went, who's there? And it was after. Never mind. Wow. Can you cut that out?
No. We don't have the technology.
Look, I can't even remember what I did. Okay. Great.
Now you...
I derailed the entire conversation.
You didn't derail anything. This is all about you. This is
I'm
your
gonna go
show.
Back behind the screen.
You can do anything you want. Let me see those little
well,
beepers.
Well, I can do it with it as long as it's beepers. It makes sound.
I had to kick all the D10 people were in here having a meeting, and we had this conference room.
And they're like...
And I was the door, and I was like, hey, guys, sorry, we got the room at 9:30, and they just stared at me, and I was like, yeah, we're doing something with Joel McHale. I totally used your name like a grenade, because I knew that they wouldn't fuck with me if I dropped your name.
Yeah. Even Sal didn't make fun of me?
Sal was not in here. It was the producers. It was all the EPs.
They said anything for Joel McHale.
Right, I'm sure.
They literally did.
Yeah.
They literally did, and they got up and scurried out.
They went, that guy that jumps in front of a curtain every week? The glorified weatherman?
They didn't take it that far. Glorified weatherman. Then I'm the.
We both are now glorified.
No, I'm a glorified weatherman, but on like a smaller feeder station.
Web weather.
They're like, oh, I hope I get called up to the majors.
I derailed it earlier.
There was a word traffic jam at my mouth.
Final Fantasy 13.
End of line. How do you the soup was really like your first big job.
It was my first consistent job. In that I got here in 2000, mm-hmm. September of 2000, in October, and I could not get an agent, and I had a manager who was a guy from high school, and I got a part on.
Was his name Styles?
He ran a high school.
Do you wear Ray Bans?
And a manager. Jason Burns. Do you know Jason?
Do I? Oh, maybe I do.
Do you know Jason?
I don't know if I do.
I don't know. He now works for Playboy.
Hey.
So, but he was my manager, and I could not. We were trying to get an agent for that, and I got a part on Will and Grace because you had to be 6'7" or over. So I went and bought a pair of boots with heels on them.
Nice.
And so I was like 6'6" because I'm 6'4". So, and I got this tiny little part. Then I got an agent, and then they dropped me after like 6 months because they're like, "You're not booking anything." And then they said to me, they said to Jason, they go like, We will represent Joel McHale in 2 years when he's big enough for this agency.
That's really nice, but where then they don't have to do any of the work.
Yeah, yeah. That was...
Well, we'll just come along when all the hard work's been done. We'll just scoop it up there. Yeah. When you're already successful and a chimp could represent you, because all they have to do is just say,
awesome
he's not
day.
Interested, and then throw poop.
Yeah, yeah. And then I got a commercial agent, and then I started doing commercials, and I just kind of thought, well, if I can't get a real agent, I'm just going to do commercials because I don't have to get a real job if I'm doing that, and I'll just try to do as many of these as I can. And my plan was that if I didn't, something wasn't happening within 5 years of being here, then it wasn't worth it, and I'm going to go back to Seattle and do weather and traffic.
You're going to go back now?
I'm going back.
Not really panning
commercial
out.
Commercial auditions is a miserable experience.
I'm no Beyonce. And then the soup came along, but it was a pilot. It wasn't called the soup. It was called the What the Awards, which you'll all agree is the worst title for a show that has ever been.
It's not great.
Thought of. No. Because it's supposed to be the What the Hell Awards, or, you know, like What the Fuck Awards, something like that. But they didn't want to put that in, so they just left that out. So the only thing kind of good about it was every time anyone would ask me, it was like, it's called the What the Awards, and people would go, what? Like I would have to explain to them every time what it meant. Kind of like the Shawshank Redemption.
Yes.
Where you're like, wait, what? That's a long title. Can you explain it to me? So then Ted came in as the new president, and he was like, this is ridiculous. And he changed it to The Soup.
Which was a good move.
Yes, because of the name recognition. And when we first were on, I mean, we were Friday nights at 10, which was a desert. So we were rating horribly. We were rating like you guys. And,
he's not kidding.
it was the cheapest thing that they had ever made. So they let us stay on and screw up for like a year and a half.
I'm not going to lie and say that the web soup is not one of the most fun jobs I've ever had.
It's so much fun.
I mean, when I first started at MTV, Kinnear was just leaving Talk Soup. And some of our crew worked on his show, so I went to one of his last tapings and talked to him, and I'm foolishly at like 22 years old. I was like, I really want this job when you leave. And he was like, good for you.
You sweet kid.
Yeah, exactly. And then years later, I guest hosted Talk Soup when it was in between Aisha and Howe.
Right.
And again, like amazing. And then when you started doing it, I was like, shit, he's doing it better than I would have. So I was happy that...
That's not true.
It is true. And then now, you know, but now I got my own little nerdy piece of the pie. I'm pretty happy.
And it plays into exactly what you love.
Yes. Yeah. Guys getting hit in the balls with things.
And gaming. Well, the other part of the network.
I thought you were going to say, and gay stuff.
And gay... What?
Why would you?
And gay gaming.
Yes, gay gaming.
It's the fun. It's so much fun. I can't believe I get paid to just go out there and screw around and make fun of television and all that. I can't believe it.
But it's fun. What's really been interesting for me is just watching the evolution.
Watching me learn how to read teleprompter?
No.
Holy Lord.
No, seriously, watching the evolution of your career, just going from this nice guy who was... Because you were toying with stand-up when I first met you, and then I think you... Because you did sketch.
That O'Brien's thing, I did a total of like 5 times.
And I remember at the time...
And you would just happen to be there like 4 out of the 5.
And I remember at the time... I'm honestly not... just saying this, but I remember saying to my friend Jamie Kayla, like, fuck, this guy's really funny. And he's like, yeah, I know. And he kind of said it like mock bitterly, like it's like his third time doing stand up. And we were all really amazed.
Oh, God.
So it was fun.
Why didn't you tell me at the time?
Well, I didn't want you to get a swelled head, but now you're sort of my boss.
How?
I don't
Ryan
know.
Ryan is our boss.
Who is?
Ryan.
We all work for Ryan.
We all work for Ryan.
We all work
Ryan for is like China. He owns Comcast yes. debt.
Yes. Yeah. It's like Catch 22. Catch 22.
I've never seen that guy in this building, by
no.
the way. I think he just like
is a,
yeah.
I've seen him.
He Batman took over shoot. Like an entire floor.
He did take over floor. He lives in the walls and just comes out like a mist. Yeah.
Yes, he floats around as a green gas, like
he really,
Dracula.
He really does.
And every time he sees, I've seen him twice with when I'm with Brad and Boyd, and he just is like, "What are you guys up to? Comedy? All right." And then he's just missed.
And then
away.
he just where'd he go? Yeah. You turn around for a second, you're like, "Did you?" And then he's gone. Yeah. You're like, what happened?
Mr. Simpson.
The Brad and Boyd used to do his radio show. They used to do comedy for his radio show.
Yeah, they're REPs on Web Soup. And, like, the funniest fucking guys.
The funniest guy. So remarkably funny.
We gotta have them on the podcast. They're so funny.
They're so funny. Boyd was telling me, he walked in there during a commercial break, and Ryan was eating a brownie and then spat it out.
He just told us that story.
Did he really?
Yeah, did you get that?
Just to get the flavor?
No, just to get the flavor. Yeah. And he goes, what are you doing? And he's like, I'm just doing this with flavor. And then Boy goes, oh, are you gay? And then he had him do the same thing on the air, which is pretty good.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I don't... I get the flavor of a brownie, but then I swallow it and let it live in my tummy for a little while.
I went on the Martha Stewart show.
Oh.
And we were making shortbread. What else? And I looked at the lineup of what was coming on the shows to come. It was all like desserts and stuff. And I was like, Martha, how do you keep so trim and fit? And I noticed that she would try every shortbread, every flavor, and then she would just throw it. Like she would just take a little bite and then throw it off to the side. And I was like, she's like, because I don't eat it all. I just taste it.
You just taste it.
How do you stop?
I remember when David Cross was doing Arrested Development, he talked about how there was a scene where they all around the table were supposed to eat a dessert or something.
Oh, they're having carbs.
Yeah, no, there was a carb episode. And then they basically, all of them were like, bah! Like between takes, spitting it into a chum bucket, like, get this out of my system.
It's television. Only in Los Angeles.
Yes, only in Los Angeles. This really plays on the finest parts of the human psyche.
Yeah.
This business, insecurity, personal issues, weight image.
Yeah, it's great.
But you fucking played football in college.
What?
Not
get out
well,
of here.
But I did.
Well, I
was really good at practicing.
I wasn't even allowed at games. I was so scrawny in college. They were like, you bring the morale down of the sport.
You can't even be in the marching
Please.
Band.
Yeah.
Here, try holding
you're
this
sub band.
Try holding this tuba. Well, let's start over again. Try holding this clarinet.
This triangle's heavy.
I walked on at the University of Washington because the guys in my fraternity all played, and so I, in the fraternity that I actually could not stand being in, but I liked the football players a lot. And but so I walked on after I was on the rowing. I was recruited to row out of high school, and that was a horrible experience because there was all this crazy hate. Like I've noticed that the sports that no one watches, people, the hazing quotient goes up because it makes them feel important. Whereas in the football team, they were just like, there's no hate. You got to win. Go study the playbook, jerk.
Yeah, and they also, it's also the, those smaller sports, they get all uppity, I think, because, you know, they're like, yes, this is an elite sport. You're like, is it elite or is it just yeah. that no one wants to do
unpopular.
It or watch it? Shut up.
I'll row over you.
Yeah, that's...
On land, nice try, Coxman.
They would take, as a hazing ritual, they would... shave the fresh. I got out before this happened, but at the first regatta, mm-hmm. it's called. They would shave the freshmen's heads and their eyebrows off and put all the hair in a pillow, and then there is a display case. I don't know if it's still out at the rowing house of the pillows.
Yeah.
Going
full,
years
full
back,
of hair?
Full of hair.
Wow,
why would they?
It's disturbing.
Yeah, it's kind of that's creepy.
That
it's
plays creepy. Nicely into my plans of replicating a crew team with their DNA.
They're big fans of THX 182 or 1182.
THX 1138.
Yeah, but yeah. So then I walked on, and yeah, I gained a lot of weight, and
like just muscle mass from.
I was lifting weights like two times a day, plus practicing. It was crazy.
Where did you find time for comedy in there?
I was in college. I made little jokes on the sidelines. I'd be like, see that guy? That could kick his ass. Oh, he's gonna, here he comes near me.
You funny motherfucker. Why don't you do some clip show? That's a great idea.
But I knew it was telling because I got no respect on the football field. I was really good at crying and crumpling and making the defense look terrific. But on skit night, I killed. And I thought that was the first time. The senior, you know, like the stars of the team were like, hey, man. Yeah, that's exactly what it was like.
Now, what was this? Was the skit the classic football guys dressed up like the cheerleaders?
No.
Okay, good.
I made fun of they were like, don't make fun of the coaches because they always get made fun of and they'll be mad at you.
So you went right for the coaches?
I made fun of the team doctor.
Oh, okay.
Who didn't merit this reputation, but just that. It was always like, well, you might have a broken arm, but you can play, right? Yeah, you turned your ankle, but you can play. So it was always this, like, you're going to be fine. A concussion is not something bodily that's harmful.
Well, you get a little cortisone, you'll headache. Be fine. A little cortisone in the eye, and you'll
right.
be fine.
And
I'm going to prescribe you a walk it off.
What? No, that's really...
just walk it off. It'd be
a
fine.
A lot of, like, give him some air. Give him some oxygen.
Fine. He'll be fine.
So, yeah. So that was... Yeah. Obviously, this... So we just were bringing in different players with different ailments. And then we brought in a dead player, and he said, just, all right, let him sit out the first quarter. And then throw him back in the game. It's not that funny, but...
So the first... But the first couple seasons you're doing the soup...
Yes.
Are you feeling like it's having... any cultural impact at all, or are you just feeling like I'm doing this in my basement?
That is how we felt.
When did you start to feel the turn? Because I guess 2 years ago, you started this experiment where you're like, oh, I wonder if I were to go to a comedy club, if people would come out and see me. And your EP KP and Anderson and I were opening for you, and you started selling out every show, and it was like 200 seat rooms. 300 seat rooms, Sunday night, 500 seat rooms, sold out, and then, you know, it turns into 1,800 seats. I mean, like, when is that when you kind of felt the turn, or did you feel it before that? Did you have a sense that the show was actually changing your life?
The first year and a half, at least, I could not read teleprompter. If they have some of those outtakes, I mean, it was like they had hired a person who could not read or speak English, and.
It's trickier than you think at first.
It really is.
Yeah.
And I am a terrible... you're terrific at just cold... Now I can kind of cold read fine, but it was really bad. But there was that sense of basement, no one's watching, let's just entertain ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see what we can say without getting in trouble.
Those are always the best shows.
That's always the best way to do it, yeah.
And I think we still have that weird attitude, because once you adopt that for so long... then you can't stop thinking that way. So there's a side of me that when I say things, I'll be like, no one's going to know, care. And then I, like last week when I was making fun of The Bachelor, the girl who said, you can you can land on my landing strip anytime you want. And we were like, follow the red bumps into the... follow the red bumps and you'll be... yeah, I get, you know, the stand-up was a really good measure of that. But I was mostly terrified because I hadn't really done stand-up for real. And so I was scared the whole time because I was like, I don't know of anything. And then you would get up and save me because you're a pro.
No, but people were, no matter how good of a set, I always thought like, oh, this is a really good set. As soon as I was like, and everyone, here's Joel McHale. It was like the most explosive, beautiful, like End of Raiders, people's faces melting. Shut your eyes, don't look at him.
And then they're like 15 minutes in, they're like, bring Chris back out.
No, not great. At all.
Where people are the clips?
This guy, you've never seen lines after a show. Like, people lined up. You had Spaghetti Cat shirts, which
spaghetti
were awesome.
Shirts. I need to make some more, though.
Make some Spaghetti Cat
shirts. I did it as, like, when I first started Super, I was like, okay, I want this hopefully to do what it did, like 10% of Kinnear's career. And if I could just do some, if I could just have people know, because I realize Hollywood, yes, it is a talent contest, but it's mostly a popularity contest in many ways, is that you just, to get out in front, get people to notice you. And so that was kind of like, oh, well, if I can do that and just be on TV every week, then I'll get into those rooms to audition for things.
There's no question that you'll have Kinnear's career. I mean, there's no question. There's no question. Everyone loves you, and rightfully so.
Even the Academy Award?
What?
Even the Academy Award?
Yeah. He's going to win an Academy Award. I'm calling it right here.
Well,
right
okay. Here?
You're going to win the Academy Award for As Good As It Gets 2.
What is it?
We both went for a sequel show.
That was like a starter's pistol.
That was
game show.
Oh, damn it.
Chance for a movie parody? chance to make a funny movie title. Go.
I was going to say As Good As It Gets 2, Getting Gooder. But that was the
based on a novel by Sapphire. Precious 2. The Reckoning.
Precious 2, The Clumps. Come on, you guys. Wow. Why wouldn't I?
How dare you?
Eddie Murphy dresses up like Precious? Of course he would do that.
Yes. He would, yeah.
He might be Monique. I'm not 100% sure. Eddie Murphy might be Monique in prosthetics.
But he would shave his legs. She doesn't.
That's true.
But I was saying, with all the stand-up, you, for the last 2 years, when you were available, because I think I asked you to be almost at every single show, I would just sit and watch Chris's set because I was like, if I can be as funny as Chris and put this together correctly, then it's going to be okay.
Well, that's very sweet. But I have to say those shows were literally probably some of the most fun shows I've ever done because if people are coming, you know, part of the challenge that you face in a comedy club is that
Facing crazy drunk.
You don't know. Like there's a percentage of people, and it's shifting now a little bit. Like people are actually coming to see me specifically, which is cool. But I still get groups of people who don't know who I am. They just were given free tickets from the comedy club.
Yeah, they just go because it's going to see comedy.
Yeah.
Not to go see you do comedy.
You got to win them over. I mean, the thing about comedy is that there are subgenres. It's not all one thing. It's like music. Yeah. You wouldn't go to a country bar and be like, how come there's no rap? And you're like, well, you should have looked that up before you went out. But anyway.
And it's a sport to see if you can throw the comic off.
That is, especially in England, they do that. But just the idea that, you know, you got to win those crowds over because they don't know who you are. But, you know, if I'm opening for you or performing for you, people who watch The Soup and know who you are already a good audience because they like comedy. You know, like they have a certain vibe and a sense of humor, and it just makes them fun to perform for, as opposed to, you know, how come you're not? I had some guy say this to me after a show in Texas once. Hey, man, you're going to be all right, but you should do more jokes about NASCAR and barbecues. I mean, things people really understand. I was like,
and you
thanks.
Were like,
that was my first failed suicide attempt.
What bar in Texas was that?
It wasn't a bar. It was a comedy club called Cap City in Austin, Texas.
That's supposed to be a pretty good...
Wait, when did you perform in England?
I was performing in London in 2001.
And they're brutal.
It is brutal. I'm warning you. If someone ever says to you, go do stand-up in London, put on a fucking Kevlar vest and a suit of armor because it is... Did we talk about this last podcast?
I think so, yeah.
There's a sport where the audience will try to derail you, and it's trying to see you recover, and they want you to insult them back, and it's a really like super aggressive, wow. You know, you're a cunt. Now you're a cunt. Woo! And then everyone
and then it all goes on YouTube.
Gets pissed.
Yeah.
As they say.
Wow.
So it's I mean, obviously it's not
did
like
you
that
do,
everywhere.
How did the booking work?
It just I went to London on a solo booze sabbatical. And I was like, I wonder if I could drink my way through London. And if you can keep up with the English, you have a problem. So I was drinking at museums, zoos. You can drink everywhere there. And I just emailed a couple people from local shows around town. So I did a couple like shows in bars. And it's different there. People who book shows at bars actually make money in London.
Oh, really?
And the shows were brutal, especially before I got up on stage. The guy's like, all right, your next comic comes all the way from Los Angeles, California. Oh, immediate boo. Like, fuck me for being from here. And then, so I'm American and I'm from L.A. Yeah.
Just being from L.A. will ruin you anywhere else in the country for the most part. He's from Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, I'm sorry we make your dreams come true. I'm sorry that we made Avatar for you.
For you,
hey, if it wasn't for us, you'd be speaking fucking German. Oh, what? Oh, I guess I'm getting the light. So I guess I'm getting the candle. It's, you know, everything there is...
Everything's old-timey. Yeah,
everything's old-timey.
Oh, the bonnet is being closed.
I see the pies are being sewn up. Do they sew up pies? I don't even know if that works. I don't know if that works.
And so did you win?
Did
you win the crowd back?
I got them a little bit, but there were literally people just standing at the bar with pints, just like shouting incoherent. Ah! I couldn't even understand what they were saying. They were just shouting to shout. So
Give any of the British comics more respect, or did they?
The British comics were a little more in tune. They came out swinging really hard,
right?
So they. They came out a little more aggressive and just kind of immediately, you know, like knocked the crowd into submission. But as soon as they saw the weakness in me, it was just like
they smelled blood. And...
Yeah, exactly. Oh, hyena! Here, let me lift up my thigh so you can get to the tenderest meat. Like it was, it literally felt like that. But it was a good experience.
How long were you on stage?
like 15 minutes. I don't know.
Wow,
15 minutes.
It's a range of emotions.
It felt like 8 hours, but it was only about 10 or 15.
That's
minutes.
Awesome. I would like to see that tape.
It was fun. There was no tape. What there was tape of, oh man, I was so drunk. Zach Galifianakis was shooting a movie out there at the time, and so I stayed with him for a couple days.
He was great on SNL, by the way.
He was amazing on
awesome.
SNL.
He was great.
Amazing.
Well, probably, I mean, he and John Hamm.
Yeah, Hamm, those guys knocked it out of the park, and I really hope that... Kind of makes you want them to just keep putting funny people on and not just like, here's a non-funny person.
It was so nice to see someone not do a forced monologue where it was just Zach going out there and doing his jokes
being Zach.
And being funny.
Yeah.
It reminded me of like, you know, the early, you know, like when George Carlin was on, he would go on and do material and it was just, it's more.
Yes, it was a comedy show.
It was a comedy show, not just like schlock. That's like, let's see if we can try and make this person funny. That shouldn't be the point of the show.
So So Zach was shooting this movie called Below, and so there were all these great British actors, and so we go to all these super swanky, like, private gentlemen's clubs full of British actors where I'm looking around, I'm like, hey, that's Rufus Sewell and, you know, whoever else.
Wow.
And so we go to this after-hours nightclub, and Bjork is there, and I get it in my pudgy, drunken head that I'm going to ask Bjork to dance. And so... Everyone's waiting. I mean, you're drunk, you have no timeline. So for me, this was all happening quickly. But apparently everyone was waiting to leave. And I'm like, no, you guys, I'm going to hit on Bjork. And so I walk up to Bjork and I tap her on the shoulder. And she turns around and looks at me. Her eyes widen. And then she immediately, without saying anything, spins around and walks the other way very quickly. So I didn't even get to say hi, Bjork.
Wow.
But she spun.
She did spin.
So in a way, you danced with her.
And then she talked to some other guy. That guy totally cock-bjorked me. Come on, up top! No, but that really did happen. And then I drunkenly was lamenting about it. Zach taped me. I was just sitting on the couch. Everyone was like,
oh, God.
So I hit on Bjork tonight, and that didn't go real well. It was so fucking
sad.
Where was that? Someone stole the camera.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Why isn't that in your stand-up?
It's not funny. It's just sad.
But that's part of stand-up.
Yeah, I guess so.
Just sad
stories. You say that a lot about like a lot of your drinking stories. You don't like to talk about that stuff.
I don't mind talking about it. It's just, to me, it's so close to me. I don't know what's funny about it.
Do, like, do you think maybe in like another few years when you get further away from it all, like you could talk about
it? It's been 7 now. I mean, I
wait for 10.
Wait for 10. 10's a magic number.
But here's the weird part. You've been away for drinking for 7 years, and yet you look 7 years younger than you did in 2003.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
It turns out the body was not meant to be poisoned by alcohol 15, 20 times a day.
It's crazy.
But
you and I both, as you have remarked many a time on stage, we have the perfect amount of messed up hair.
Perfect,
and
strategically disheveled hair.
And 4-day old growth on our
Yes,
faces.
Yes. Yes,
it's all part of the look.
Just as
are we going to be doing this when we're like 75?
Yes, we are.
Yeah,
it's a good the diamond soup. It's the diamond soup anniversary.
Chris,
you remember when we did our show?
Oh, your hair looks terrific.
I don't, Grandpa. I don't like watching those boring men on television when technology can be beamed directly into my brain. I don't want to watch your moving picture.
Oh, wall. Are you watching Caprica?
I've not been watching Caprica. No. I've been so into Doctor Who, I've not been watching Caprica.
No, I'm into Caprica. I know that you guys want to hear that. But
I've not seen...
Speaking of things being beamed right into your mind.
You like it?
I do like it.
I haven't seen it yet.
I'm into it.
I like to wait. I kind of like... You know, my kind of nerd plan is I'll wait till a series has enough episodes banked so I can just watch them like back to back to back.
On Blu-ray?
Or streaming on Netflix, streaming on the Roku box.
Do you think Blu-ray is that much better than regular DVD?
There are a lot of things about Blu-ray I do not like, actually. Like,
what?
I don't like the fact that it makes...
The load time? I hate
Load time sucks, but I don't like... It makes a lot of really great film look like video to me.
Yeah.
And I know that's a setting, but still... Like, I review stuff for Attack all the time, and I'm like, this just fucking looks like video, and I want to see, like, I want to see a little bit of grain. I want to see a little bit of, maybe that's just because what I'm trained to.
Well, I don't want to look at the TV and see, like, feel like it's just a window into what's going on in that, like, what's being filmed. I want to make it see, I want to see, like, a good picture. You know, I want to see, like, a nice, nicely lit picture.
Yeah, but to that point, there's, like, a lot of, like, you can see fabric that you never would see before, like, stitching on... That's fucking gay. But anyway, you can see a lot of fabric.
I'm not
really
so
nice.
Concerned about that. It's your belt made of dicks that
what?
I'm concerned about.
But I thought that...
Why would you have that?
Why would you...
Someone told me it looked good.
Just open yourself up for...
Anyway,
but I feel I like you sound like old men. So, well, not you. But, no, I... yeah, I like it.
Do you ever feel that... this wasn't anything that ever occurred to me until I started...
that I'll never play a video game again?
I can't play video games anymore, because if I did, I would never do anything else.
That's true. Me too. Well, I got kids now, and I realize for every hour that I play video games, that's another hour of sleep I'm going to need.
Oh, my
and
God.
Another hour of not seeing them.
Can I just talk about Eddie first, your son Eddie, for a second? Because he's
yes,
awesome. And
greatest.
I know you talk about this on stage, and it's I don't want to tread on a bit of that you have, but Joel and I are neighbors, and for Halloween a couple years ago... his son Eddie was dressed like a light switch. He wanted to be a light switch.
Yeah.
It was the most adorable. He just had a big flat panel and a big switch
yeah.
in the middle. He was a light switch.
That was what he had thought of back in August, and that's all he was dead set. And now he, like last year, he was a train. And I don't know what was
he's
going
17.
On.
I should probably preface yeah. it by saying
he's,
that.
It's interesting that he still wants to dress up.
No, the train last year was awesome, too.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
And the greatest part of that is that he's dressed up as what looked like a Thomas train, Thomas the Tank Engine, which is blue. But there's a number of blue engines. Mm-hmm. One of them is Hank. So people would be like, hey, it's Thomas. And he's like, Hank.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm Hank. And
But I understand that if someone was like, nice TIE fighter. It's actually a Klingon warbird. Like, I totally understand.
Right.
A bird of prey.
How would you ever get those confused?
What? Well, yeah. I don't know, but someone would. But to Eddie, that's the same thing. Like, confusing those two trains is retardo. You know, like, no one would do that.
He was a little sick last week, and he was sitting there at the table. He's now just 5, and he was like, oh, it's so irritating. And I'm like, what? And he's like, my poop is all squishy.
currently sitting down there.
And I was just like, I hear him go like, ah, oh, it's so irritating.
He's not adorable when I say that, but when Eddie says it.
You're right. Then you're just like, ah, I don't care what squishy.
Well, Chris, if you didn't say it all the time, it'd probably be adorable.
Well, if I didn't have squishy poop all the time, I wouldn't have to talk about it, would I?
And that's just a concern for all of us and your health.
Oh, what's happening now?
A lot of Olestra. Like, remember Olestra?
Am I sitting on a cake? What? Olestra, yeah.
It came and went.
Do you mind telling the story about Eddie wanting to see Isaac's penis?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. All right. Well, Isaac is the second child we have, clearly a boy. And we had just brought him home. And we were exhausted, and my wife, though, wanted to have our first dinner as a family around the family dinner table, the first one, the first day. Like, this is the full family. This is like, wow, there's got to be a first day forever, and this is going to be the first day. So Isaac was in his little carrier right at the table on a chair, so he was there, and then we were all there. And Isaac... Eddie doesn't eat at all. The five-year-old, now five-year-old, but at this time he was three. But he doesn't eat. I've never seen him eat. He gets all his strength and nutrients from photosynthesis. And he at this. So I was begging him to eat at one of many meals that I always beg him to eat. And so I was like, Eddie, two more bites of fish, buddy. And he was like, Eddie, two more bites of fish. And he's like, and then I was like, Eddie, two more bites of fish. And he goes, I don't want to eat fish. I want to see Isaac's penis. And then I realized I could bargain. And so I was like, all right, two more bites of fish. And I'll let you see Isaac's penis. And if you eat your potatoes, I'll let you play with his ass a little bit. How does that sound? Yeah. That was just, once again, out of the blue, just like, I don't want to eat. I want to see Isaac's penis. It was just, yeah.
That's what's been bugging you.
You're well, it's good to talk to your kids.
Yeah.
I'm glad you used the word penis with the kid and not some weird other word.
We have not do what many parents do and give all sorts of other names to their your hoo-ha downward facing water bottle. And yeah, we don't do, yeah.
I would have chose weenus. I would just really? Love to see a little kid just I want to see Isaac's weenus.
The awesome wand.
The harbinger, a harbinger of sorrow is what we call it.
Sort of the cry maker. The old
sort of Demosthenes or
sex. That's that thing where you take everything off except your socks, and there's a lot of apologizing, right?
Yes.
Make sure.
Nice.
It's when I have to thank and apologize to the girl at the same time somehow.
I'm sorry. A three-way. Now I have to apologize to two people. Oh, yeah. That sucks.
How do I split up the 5 minutes?
I don't know. I want to know if you feel. Have you kind of eased off at all on your show as far... Because like, I've been doing the Chelsea show regularly for the past couple of years. And in the beginning, I would say the worst things I could think of about famous people that I did not know.
Wow.
And then I would always feel bad. And so I kind of had to strike this balance between... I try to be playful on the show, but I always feel like, how can anyone take anything I say seriously? Like, do you ever feel on your show like, maybe I should apologize to that person? Or do you ever feel bad?
Yeah, every day, all the time. as far as reality show goes, I rarely pull any punch because all those people signed up to be on those shows. All those people waited in line somewhere and filled out forms and interviewed and tried to be on that show. So if you're on Charm School... Or you're on Tequila Shot at Love a couple of years ago. There's so many different shows now where people are embarrassing themselves. And then people will be like, how can you say it? It's like they all chose to be there.
Yeah.
So I always, like any... So I have no problem with that. As far as celebrity things go, I always... make sure the premise is actually true. Mm-hmm. And if you are doing something so egregious that you actually... rise above the horrible din that Hollywood is already making, the horrible sound, the huge ball of horribleness, and you actually single yourself out.
Whoa. Hey, can you not use that term, please?
Sorry. When you shipmate yourself out there.
That's much better. If you guys like us,
when you
UPN
small
yourself.
Part yourself in Terminator 2.
Terminator 3.
It was T3.
When you get scalped.
When you web soup to a
point
where
in House of a Thousand Corpses.
Right, yeah.
I feel like then it's weapons free. Then
but
we
also,
can just go.
And also in your case too, like you're helping to keep these people relevant.
Yeah,
like you're giving them what they want, which is to be in the machine and be relevant.
Yeah, yes, I think there's a lot, especially reality stars are doing anything they can to stay relevant and to stay in the spotlight. The problem is, most of them don't have a talent for acting or for hosting, mm-hmm. most 99% of the time. So then they just slowly fade away, and what they have to do is get surgery, or get a DUI or something like that brings them right back to the front again. And so, but as far as like celebrities that I'm like, oh man, if this person gets mad at me, there's a side of me that's like, yeah, there is that. But if the premise is so egregious, then we have to address it, because if we don't, then I think people will be like, hey, so you're gonna make fun of that?
They're almost like looking to you like in the schoolyard, and you're like,
yeah, like what you gonna say
that.
Something?
And I, be like, I said, ha ha.
You know what's so interesting about? good catch. Yeah. You know, I've become a clown, a class clown. Wow, Bart has feelings. Sorry, just quote The Simpsons. Do you still have to audition for stuff, or are you at the point where they're starting to send you scripts?
I audition all the time.
You do?
For movies all the time, yeah.
Yeah, well, movies are weird because the movie industry generally does not recognize the television industry
no.
as being anything special.
Which is weird, too, because, like, you know, Community is a one-camera shot like a movie kind of, you know?
Yeah. But so, yeah,
they don't care. Movie executives do not watch television. They don't understand television
culture.
Well,
that's the shame, too, because right now television is kicking the film industry's ass. Like, there's so much better TV than movies coming out right now.
There really is a lot of good
TV
going
on right
now.
Parks and Rec and 30 Rock and Modern Family.
Yeah, I think that I agree. I mean, look at Mad Men. If you put four of those episodes together and made it a movie, it would be a huge movie.
Yeah.
Or half the stuff on HBO. And yeah, television is as high a quality and as low quality as it's ever been.
That's true.
The polarization
the swings both ways.
I mean, literally, television to me has never been better, and it has never been worse. And it will only go, I assume it will only go that way. The only worry is that reality shows are so cheap to make that why not just make 12 of those and you'll make a ton of money as opposed
to one
really high
quality. The
thing is, like,
whatever network puts that reality show out will then have the money to maybe, hopefully, you know, put money into a show that would be good. That's like, why don't, you know,
unfortunately,
it's a necessary evil, I think.
Unfortunately, I think The Simple Life was keeping Arrested Development on the air for a couple of years.
It did,
It's just like, well, we got to have this one.
Do you ever hear, like, oh man, did you get the Simple Life DVDs? you never hear that. You only hear the Arrested Development DVDs or, you know, same thing with when Monty Python was at its zenith, at its height, Benny Hill kicked its ass all over the ratings, but nobody ever goes, hey, remember that Benny Hill where they sped up the camera and they ran around
one. I think that's the only one.
That's the one that made it. But Monty Python is still a periodic chart.
Yeah.
Well, it's amazing. I mean, like you on Community is an amazing feat because I don't know if most people understand. It's hard enough just to get a show made. Then it is hard enough to get a show picked up. Then on top of that, it is hard enough that the show is good because there are so many people who can fuck it up.
Second season
along the way. That, like, the idea that you're on a network and you're doing a show that's funny and you get to be funny on it is miraculous.
Yeah. Well, God bless
that show
you.
Is amazing too. We just got Dan Harmon, you know, and
who is
Russo Brothers.
Dan is a mad genius.
Yeah,
never met anybody like him. And then the Russo Brothers, who made Arrested Development, the executive producers and directed a lot of them, and they hired almost all film directors to direct the episodes because they wanted it to be different looking than a lot of the handheld stuff that's being shot now. Not that that stuff was bad in any way. It's terrific. I mean, The Office is awesome. But they wanted it to just look different than everything. So they have pulled that off. I mean, they took a lot of hours. But yeah, I couldn't. When I finally booked the pilot, I just didn't. I didn't realize all the. I had gone a couple times, like almost to getting on the air with pilots, and it was just like, this is a getting another pilot, great, so happy, but who the hell knows what'll happen.
So you weren't like the first choice for the part, because it almost seems like it was written for you.
I don't know how many I don't know what choice I was. No, meaning, I mean, I know when I interview, I don't know if there was someone. I was told I was first choice. Yeah, that's what I was told. But they could
that's
be
usually the kiss
wrong.
Of death.
Yeah, I was like, no, that, well, that's
you're the
clearly
first choice.
Wrong.
Why didn't I get this?
Our crazy yeah. showrunner wants you.
It's always
but not
the guy.
Suits.
Yeah. And I was like, no, this is going to the guy that played Hunter in the '80s. And so,
Fred Dreyer.
Yeah, Fred went to Fred Dreyer. No, I don't know what the actual choice list, what the order was. Yeah. But
well, could you just walk us through who else would have been better in that role? I think that's what Jonah's really asking.
No, I just like the casting is great on that show. It's like from the first episode out, it seemed like
it
know,
seems like
everything
it's your
was
show.
Written for.
Oh well, people say that, and I'm like, do you think I'm an asshole? And no, but when I read the script, I was like, oh, this is great. Yeah. I think I could do this guy. Well, don't separate that.
No,
don't pull that out and just play
this
that.
This is like a reality show.
The yeah. podcast.
No, it's one of those things where Dan knew that guy, and I actually ended up meeting that guy who it's based on, and it's not me, but it's very easy to be that guy and to play that guy and get to play that guy.
That's
and,
like Jeff Bridges being the dude.
Yes, yeah. And my guy is not the moral center of the show, yeah. And so there was a great. I think because so many pilots are written. As you are the moral center of the show, and not that I wouldn't want to be that, but it's so typical that it's a 30-something guy who's always wondering why he can't have love. Yeah. Every script I read, it was just like 30-something guy who can't figure out why all his friends are happy and in love with kids, and he why is he where he is. But this was just different because this guy was fighting against some completely other things. And
Do you feel it all? Like, because I think everyone would look at you and go, oh my God, like, Joel, it's like he has all these great jobs, but do you ever feel like, I'm just not hitting it? Or do you still ever feel those things that you felt from when you were first starting out?
Only like every minute of the day.
So that never goes away.
That will never go away. In fact, it gets heightened.
If you care about what you do, that never goes away.
Actually, yeah, the stakes only get higher. And yeah.
So, oh, I got farther to fall now.
No,
awesome.
Yeah. I was like, oh, now it's on the air and it's gonna be on next year. What, you better be good next year. And right. Yeah, that's you can't do that to you just I was just sit back and enjoy what you're doing and love it, and I do love it, but there is always that like, ah, it's gotta be there's always me always quietly judging myself.
Yeah,
I'm glad to hear that. That's just a thing. I mean, I'm not glad to hear, because I know that that's torturous. Because I do it, and I feel like most
comedians
do it. If
you don't do it, then you're probably not. I mean, it's probably wrong for me to say, but if you're not somewhat constantly trying to be better at what you're doing, then you're not. It's not,
funny, yeah. And like so, the upside to having that kind of hyper self awareness is, you know, you constantly want to do better, and you're constantly working on your craft, and you're constantly trying to see how you can improve. And then, of course, all the downsides are like. The anxiety, yeah. the self-doubt,
right.
the depression, like all that shit that goes along with it is just like the two halves of that package. But ultimately, I don't know. I feel like it's worth it.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I mean, I literally would never. I could not be happier.
Could you picture yourself doing anything else?
I think one of the reasons why I started getting jobs is because I knew I couldn't do anything else. I had left no option open. I remember my dad was like, you should get a backup plan and get your real estate license.
I was told that by an ex-girlfriend.
Yeah, and I'd be like, the backup plan, that I was like, no, I might as well just become a meth dealer.
And then when the market dropped out, were you like, how about that real estate license now, slam? Yeah.
Why would you do that to me, Joel?
I'm your father, I gave you life.
I don't remember telling you that.
I never said that.
That was in 1991.
It was a joke, because I think you're awesome.
I've only supported you, you jerk.
And the cats and the cradle and the silver.
He's like, call him back. Oh, Dad, I'm really sorry. Oh, that's right, click. And just do it again. but no, I believe, and all with all that kind of constantly judging myself of what I'm doing, I couldn't, and I'm happy as hell with what I'm doing.
Are there any Are there any Chevys? I didn't want to. I don't know if I should bring up Chevy. Is what's that? Because you know, Fletch was a very seminal movie for me and my comedy development. And Chevy
Fletch was a long time ago.
It really was. Is
still very funny though.
Nice guy.
Very
nice funny. Guy.
Chevy is a great guy.
Why am I asking you this? You can't. I mean, this is rude. Like, I shouldn't ask you.
But Chevy, you know, Chevy is Chevy, and he is an icon and like this legend. And it's so weird for him to just be walking around the stage all the time, not knowing his lines. So I'm kidding, Chevy.
He doesn't listen to this. Well, Chevy Chase and Matt Lillard get together to specifically not listen to this.
No, I'll be like, Chevy, are you, like, first of all, Chevy, are you on email? He's like, no, my email's in New York. And I'll be like, what? He's got a lovely, lovely family. He's got three daughters and a beautiful wife, and they've been married for like 30 years. So,
how long have you and Sarah been together?
I will be married 14 years.
Damn!
I got married when I was like 23.
But your wife is super cool.
Yeah, what?
Your wife is super cool.
Yes, and looks great.
She looks amazing.
Yeah,
two
kids.
Looking like that?
Yeah.
You are living the high life.
I hit a grand slam when I met her. I married way up.
But I think you're doing all right. You're holding up your end all right. You're in good shape, Joel McHale.
Not when I came to the marriage with a 89 Nissan Sentra and a stereo. It did not.
And a leather band wristwatch.
Did not.
And a, and like, joke in my heart.
And it wasn't a stereo in the car. It was just a boombox in the passenger seat, right?
Her grandma, when I was dating her, I didn't have a car at that point. I was dating her and I was in college. And she was like, she just drives him around everywhere. She thought I was just like using Sarah for rides everywhere. I was like, yeah, give me a ride. I'll date you, no problem.
You're like a hot driver.
Oh, that was...
A driver with benefits.
Yeah.
It's not a fun feeling, though, having the girlfriend drive you around.
It's a great feeling.
Says the guy who made the series called The Freeloader's Guide to Life.
Right, because I always sat in the back.
Oh, there you go.
And I was like,
nice. You just bark at her from the back. And then you get out of Barney's, and they're like, hey, the...
Hi, everyone. And then I ram up.
My one more question I want to ask you before, so we can let you get out of here is...
My bladder has reached a point that... I'm glad I turned that down.
Someone's calling the set of Wall Street.
Oh, hold on. Okay. That's my wife. Everything's fine. Everything's...
Are you talking about me? She's this weird sense.
I hear you.
The last thing I want to ask you about is Seacrest must have a pretty good sense of humor because you beat him against the rocks relentlessly like an orca and a beached seal.
Yes.
And
wait, can we literally push pause?
Just like two more minutes.
No, sorry. Yeah, Seacrest.
I was just asking that you took a quick bathroom break.
Oh.
You feel a lot better now?
So much better. How much? There was blood in it.
You're a tall man. Your bladder must be the size of a Zeppelin, so you must have consumed a lot of liquid.
Yes, and much like when the Hindenburg crashed, when I pee, I scream, oh, the humanity.
Oh, the humanity.
Oh, the humanity.
Oh, the humanity.
Just because of burn, though, right?
Yeah, because of the burning sensation. Yeah.
It burns, and then, really... of course, the people falling off the ropes hanging.
It's weird why I have little... I take a floss, and I tie it in the little... Little what? Figures.
Yeah,
hanging. All right. Never
on that old camera, too.
Seacrest.
Speaking of little people, no, I'm kidding. Nice. Come on. Seacrest and I are probably about the same height, to be honest. So he obviously has a pretty good sense of humor.
He does. And yeah, we take him out. I mean, we make fun of him all the time for his height and his money.
Right.
And his fame. So
he can always just stand on $100 million and laugh down at you.
As he does every single day. And he's got a great sense of humor, and I've gone on his radio show, and he's been I don't feel that what we say is malicious in any way.
Right.
We really, I mean, just he's not, and he's actually not even that short. But we just make fun of him because he's smaller than me, and he's the most famous and richest. And he's like the GE of, you know, like to NBC when they were, you know, like when Letterman was on
NBC. That's how he can take it, because he knows, like, I'm really the most powerful person in this building.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's exactly how we treat it. And you take out, you know, I'm just like all those other, you know, we take out the authority figures. So he's a very good guy. And
I like Seacrest. I mean, I don't really know him. Like I said, I've never seen him
in this building. He is the busiest guy ever.
He's the busiest guy. And, like, you can't achieve that level of success without... without working your fucking ass off. I mean, I know stories of him before, when he was just doing a radio show, like going and popping up on the local news, and he'd like the the news people were like, yeah, he'd show up like an hour before anyone else, made up, ready to go. Like, he was just, like, he designed the career that he has. Like, some of it was luck, but you can't get to that level without, you know, without working
and
maintaining it. So I like him.
Yeah, Boyd and Brad had a story about where they had a guy on his radio show where he was talking about how to, like, save time, or you could have, like, a 3-day work week. And then, but apparently, Seacrest didn't compute in his head. He's like, "Oh, what? So you get another job to fill up the rest of the work week?" He's like, "No. You just work this much, and then you can just relax with your extra time." I don't understand
the extra time.
But he just didn't get that you would.
So there's
not
time
work.
For more jobs.
It's time for more jobs, right?
Oh no,
I could be doing a job right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's built an empire. So we love taking him out. He doesn't seem to bother him too much. We would let him know he would let us know, I'm sure.
You'd find out.
Yeah, we did a thing where I was on Conan when Conan his first week when he was on the air, and Seacrest was coming on the next day, and I made fun of Seacrest. I was like, when he comes out, I was like, stand up and be like, where are you? Look down, there he is. And then pick him up like a doll and put him on your knee. Don't let him tell you what he wants for Christmas. And then just stick your hand up his back because his mouth moves. And and then I got a call that next day from Ted. And Ted was like, hey, man. I'm like, you calling to congratulate me on my appearance on Conan?
Ted, by the way, is the father of our company.
Ted Harbert is the president of E! And he's Papa like, Ted. No, man, Ryan's a little upset. And I'm like, oh, no. I said too much, and he's like, yeah. And then I hang out, and then I'm like, what's the number? And he gave me the number of one of his 12 assistants. And I call, and then in the back of my mind, I was like, why didn't he just call me? And so I call up.
Well, he's got a scheduled time to be upset.
Yeah, I call up.
Oh, man. He gets paid for that, by the way, too. That's another job.
He's like, I'm upset right now from 10:15 to 10:35. And I call his assistant. I get passed to like two other assistants before I get to Seacrest. And I'm like, hey, man, I know what I say. I say a lot of crap about you, and I'm sorry, blah, blah, blah. It was all in good fun. I'm so sorry. And then long pause, and he was like, gotcha.
Wait, gotcha, and then just hung up?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was great.
Even for
I have to admit, I was like, he got me good.
Yes, wow. That is the ultimate punking when you can get the president of Comcast Entertainment to call you.
Pretty good. And it was a good joke. And then Ted called me back. He was like, I can't believe you went for it. I mean, why would I call you? What a dork. See you later. Click.
Because because that whole time you've been waiting for that call. Like, you've just been waiting for someone to be like,
here we go, this is what I've done.
You've been waiting for the you've gone too far call, as most comedians always do.
I felt like I was in third grade and I had made fun. I was like, oh, I made fun of it. I did it. I did it again. Here it goes. Well, but it was a great joke.
Joel, I don't want to dominate any more of your time, but thank you so much for coming into the office today on what is, didn't play basketball.
How dare. Wow.
Nope. Two.
He's trying to hit the trash can. You guys can't see this? In podcast
no.
Land?
This has been a very nice interview.
Yes. Oh, man. It was awesome.
And wonderful.
And people should watch Community. They should watch The Soup.
Yeah.
They watch
Community, second season, everybody.
Second season.
Oh, watch Community this week. No, but that's coming up again. but no, I get it on with Catherine McPhee.
Nice. Hey,
so
it's about time.
She plays Chevy's stepdaughter.
Nice.
And so that was crazy.
Nice.
We're both married people. I'm like, this is the strangest reality.
Acting. This is an acting boner. Yeah. She's getting in character. And by character, I mean this other person.
whoop, there go my pants.
Whoop, sorry. You guys rolling on this? Nope. Oh, no cameras at all. Oh, where am I?
Let's rehearse.
All right, excellent.
So watch that.
All right, excellent. So, Joel McHale, thanks again for coming
in. Thank you for having me, Chris.
I also want to say thanks for listening, everyone.
Bye.
From Jonah and Matt and Joel McHale and me, Chris.
You better watch Community.
Do it.
Say the end.
The end.
Okay.
Hey, humans. Thanks for listening to the Nerdist Podcast. It's quick announcement time. Jonah Ray of this very podcast will be starting a monthly stand-up show at Meltdown Comics in Hollywood. Yes, it's a comic book store, but then there's this performance space in the back. Shows are super fun there. First show is Friday, March 19th at 8 p.m., and Jonah will be performing along with Whitney Cummings, Duncan Trussell, Erica Pell, K.P. Anderson, Brent Weinbach, and then also a musical guest. The cost is $8, and somehow there's free beer. You can find more details at jonahray.com.
Then, Monday, April 5th, will be the first of what hopefully will be our monthly live Nerdist podcast at Largo in Los Angeles. Our first guest, Adam Savage of Mythbusters.
Yes!
Details on that and other shows are at, of course, Nerdist.com. Say, why not help break in our new email address with a question or comment at podcast@nerdist.com. Thanks for listening, guys. It is through the support of listeners like blah that you blah 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 and blah-da-dee blah. Farewell.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.
Hey, listeners, it's Will Arnett. Our podcast, Smartless, has crossed a milestone that seemed unfathomable when we started nearly 4 years ago, as we've just released our 200th episode. Join us as we welcome that dynamic duo of hilarity, Steve Martin and Martin Short. You've seen them on screen together in The Three Amigos, Father of the Bride 1 and 2, and most recently, and only Murders in the Building. Both are comedic geniuses in their own right, but together they are always electric, and this episode of Smartless is no exception. I don't know if I've laughed more in a single episode than this one. We discuss their career arcs both separately and as a comedy team, how they met, who is more difficult to work with, and what motivates them today. Is Steve a better banjo player than Marty as a singer? Find out on this bicentennial episode of Smartless. Follow Smartless in the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Smartless ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Plus, you get to hear Sean cry. What a loser!